Blog Talk Radio.
Are listening to the Goddess Guidance Radio Show on PsychicTalkRadio.net. We are so excited that you're with us today. I am your co-host, Nakia Lyo, and I am just thrilled about our topic, thrilled you're here, sending you greetings from wherever you are to my heart, to your heart. I want to introduce my co-host to you, Shakti Devi. Shakti, greet the people. Say hello.
Hi, everyone. I hope you had a blessed goddess-filled week. I'm so excited about this topic as well.
Yes.
So, I know.
Let me introduce the topic, Shakti.
Go ahead.
So it's going to be, this is the culmination of our series. Now, if you've been listening for the past 4 weeks, we did a four-week series on the goddess as the element, and we started with earth, and we moved into air, and then water, and then we culminated last week with the element of fire. Well, this week you're in for a treat, because we're going to talk about the goddess as the cosmos today, the goddess as the all-existing, the one before, the one after, the one that cannot be contained, that energy, that presence. And so we are very excited about that. And we look forward to unraveling goddess as the cosmos. So grab your favorite beverage, grab your favorite position on the couch, your comfy slippers, and go on a journey with us.
Absolutely. This is a really exciting topic for me in particular. As Naki had so beautifully pointed out, that so this whole month of August, we've been talking about the different elements, goddess as different elements of earth and fire and air and water. And now we go to the cosmos. So what is the cosmos? The cosmos simply means universe, right? It also means that there is an order and a harmony to the universe as well. And we know that the goddess is all a part of that. You see the goddess as being a creator or creatrix, as some people love to point out, right, in terms of the word, that the goddess creates, and she especially creates the universe. So when I talk about the universe, I'm talking about what is outside of our planet, of planet Earth, where I'm going to take you on a journey with this particular topic. And I'm taking you on this journey to help you to understand, how did life come to be within our own solar system? Now, it gets a little sciencey. I'm trying not to be too sciencey, because I don't want you to get lost in terminology and words and things of that nature. And for those of you who are astrophysicists and astronomers and things of that nature, you know I'm going to skip a little bit, right, or kind of simplify things. And that's just to make this information available for everyone, so that, you know, people won't feel that they'll have to take an astronomer class to find out.
Well, you
astronomy
know, the idea
to find out what I'm talking about.
Right. Well, the idea anyway, Shakti, is for us to give them bite-sized bits, you know, a little bite-sized morsels,
exactly,
so that they will go on an exploration of the goddess in all her forms on their own, right? So this is going to be great. I already know it. Yeah.
Beautiful, beautifully put. Thank you so much for putting that in there. So,
absolutely.
So we begin with, how did Earth come to be? And in order to understand how Earth came to be, we have to talk about the sun. Our life here in this solar system begins with the sun. So how did the sun come about? So in about over four and a half billion years ago, there was what they call a gravitational collapse, a pulling in of matter all around. From a, they call it a molecular cloud that was made of gas and plasma and dust, right? And for some reason, we had this gravitational collapse that occurred, this kind of pulling in of all these things together. And the center of that, all that matter coming together is our sun. Most of this matter had gathered in the center, as I said, but there was also other matter that orbited around, kind of like in a disc-like shape, around the sun. This matter that orbits around the sun obviously is our solar system, okay? But before we get to all of that, so what happens is you have this combination of all these elements that creates the core of our sun. And understand when we talk about this, it's not just kind of like a casual type of thing. Oh, you know, some sun was created and and there you go. And then we have the solar system. Remember how powerful the sun is. Remember how hot it is. Remember how much energy it is. So this is a lot of energy just for the sun to be in existence. So you have a general understanding of how the sun came to be. And you know that our sun is our energy. It's our life on Earth. Without it, we're, it is just like a frozen tomb, right? So Earth and the rest of the planets, they came to be because they were that matter that orbited around the sun. So all that dust and other matter and things of that nature that surrounded the sun became the different planets, including Earth. So for Earth in particular, about 4.5 billion years ago, so just maybe a half a billion years after the sun came to be, the Earth started to form. So all of that dust and matter that was around, over billions of years, the planet, sorry about that, my little computer is making noises over here. The planet ended up forming all that dust that was out there. These were, they actually called them dust grains, right? And this gas and what have you. They were small clumps, and then over billions of years, they became larger ones because there were even some of these items were kind of crashing into each other. You know, Earth was like that in this very early period where really there was no life. It was nothing but volcanic. They call it volcanic outgassing, but basically just think of the Earth as being one big lava planet, right? There's no life, there's no oxygen, none of that. All it is just lava, you know, and all this hot mass. So that's what Earth was like at the very early stage, you know, practically no oxygen whatsoever. And it's interesting because we just started talking about, what were we talking about? Was it, I think, goddesses of fire. And we mentioned that one of the goddesses of fire is Pele, who represents the volcano in Hawaii, right? And I said something in the show last time about how Pele, there was an expression that someone had, how she was here before us and she will be here after us. So when you think about the actual development of Earth and how it was just basically a volcanic lava mass, Pele actually was here before us. So it's really interesting how this mythology ties into scientific events, right? So then after it being a volcanic mass, eventually the, actually the moon came about. The moon was kind of like a planet-sized mass that hit Earth. This is one of the theories that hit Earth, and then it kind of shot out, or pieces of it shot out into what we know as the present moon, into our own, a gravitational pull of our planet, right? So a big mass hits the Earth, it shoots out, and then it becomes this mass in called moon, which is what we call the moon to this day. So this is how these things kind of come about. And Earth went through different periods. So first it was just this volcanic mass, all this lava and things of that nature. Well, eventually over time, the Earth cooled. Okay, and when lava cools, it becomes a solid crust, and then it also allows liquid water to come into the surface. So in the very early stages, Earth didn't really have life as we know it, as we understand it. This was 4 billion years that it took for Earth to be to develop enough for it to be able to sustain life. And then from that period, we go into a new period where you do have the beginnings of life on the planet, okay? And what's interesting, now, Key, you should have appreciation for this because you love crystals and gemstones and things of that nature. When I was reading about the next two periods of Earth's development, the life really began with the formation, not only the formation of the continents, but also rocks and, you know, the geological life.
And can I tell you why that the order was done that way, Shakti, please?
Because go ahead, honey.
Experiencing a lot of ascension energies right now, a lot of planetary involvement. We just came out of a, what, six-planet retrograde. Give me a break. Mercury has Mercury has finally gone direct. I think Mars is now direct. But we've still got, what, three or four other ones that are retrograde. We've got a lot of ascension energies happening. And the idea behind the crystals being formed at that moment is simply this. There is a crystalline grid that anchors the Earth's energy field. Now, that crystal, many people have heard of the term Merkaba or Merkaba, depending on how you want to say it. And that is the energetic structure in crystalline form that if we get to higher levels of meditation and higher levels of pranayamic breathing, if we get to those spaces in our practice, we can activate our own personal Merkaba field. Well, the crystalline grid is still in the Earth. And if you notice, Shakti, many, many, many sacred sites are found at sacred points or special high points on this crystalline grid. So it's real deep. If you guys want to talk about it, drop me a line. I'll dive deeper into the rabbit hole and study and present you a lesson because it's something that fascinates me.
We're going to do a show on that because, I mean, that's crystals and whatnot. That's definitely your area, and I love it.
Yes.
I'd love to learn more about it. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, I'd love to. But anyway, so the reason why the crystals were created in that moment, right, like what, second in the order, is because the grid had to be established. So you've got your ancient priests and priestesses anchoring that grid energy.
Okay.
In the crystals.
Yes. Okay. Wow. Okay. I never looked at it that way. I'm so glad you added that in there. See, that's what I was saying. I was like, I know Nakia can talk about this part. So, I mean, and I think it's amazing because, you know, in the Western world, we don't really think of rocks as having life. They're just there, right? It's something you pick up and you throw, or they form land or whatnot. But that was actually created first before that was one of the very early periods was the formation of rocks. So I was reading about it. I was like, why are they talking about the formation of rocks as being life? Well, that's what it is. Even
because
contain life within it. Yeah,
that's right. And the priests and priestesses actually embedded sacred code. I don't know if you guys know anything about, for instance, a Lemurian crystal. A Lemurian crystal is specific because it has, you can always tell it too, it has striations on the sides. And you can look at those striations. I'm going to tell you what it looks like. It reminds me of a barcode. That's what it looks like, Shakti. A barcode on the edge, if you will, into the crystal. I have several. And if you believe, now, again, this might be too woo-woo for some of our listening audience, but if you believe, you can meditate with the crystals and information, ancient light codes, ancient secrets could be downloaded to you via the transmission of the crystals, right? Remember, they were created.
So ancient
energy is,
right, so rocks and crystals and things of that nature and the gemstones, they are the primordial aspect of life here on this planet. Thank you, Mackie. That's, okay.
We're getting deep now.
Okay. So let me get to the other period. So also as a part of this period, there's bacteria and there's also some plant life. The next phase of early Earth history is when you have the appearance of what they call arthropods, you know, basically insects, arachnids and crustaceans and things of that nature. Fish, also different types of fish come to life. And then there's also the first signs of life on land, even dinosaurs. the next period, that's when you have the extinction of the dinosaurs as well, where, you know, there's different theories about what happened. I think there's one in which maybe a major, asteroid hit the planet Earth and it kind of shifted everything, choked a lot of the oxygen out of the air and whatnot, and all the dinosaurs died. So if you ever see any movie about dinosaurs and human beings living together, we actually never did live together. It would be impossible. We really couldn't populate the Earth. Dinosaurs are pretty big creatures. Anyway, moving on. The next period that we have in Earth's history is pretty much almost like the period that we have now, and that's the rise of the mammals. This is where, so mammals, as you guys will probably already know, that these are animals that give birth to other animals. So previous to that, if you have reptiles and things of that nature, they usually lay eggs and then, you know, life comes out. But for mammals, now you have mammals. And that also means that you have some kind of recognizable form of human beings about 2 million years ago. So the reason why I go through all of this is that there are a few reasons why I talk about, why am I talking about the development of the sun and the earth and all these kind of things. First of all, you have to appreciate that we are a part of the universe that's outside of Earth, that's outside of the solar system, right? In a sense, when people say, we are stardust, we were born from the stars. Well, exactly. That's how life came to be on this planet. Life as we know it, the development of the sun, the Earth, and the other planets in our solar system, it all began as dust and then gas, right? And all of that created the sun. It created all these different particles that surrounded the sun, and then eventually these particles became planets, okay? And depending upon the gases, depending upon the distance from the sun, because remember the sun is life-giving, then you had different, you know, we have what, terrestrial planets, in other words, planets where there's land to land on, and then things like Jupiter and Saturn and things of that nature, those planets, they don't really have any Earth or any continent or whatever to actually land on. You know, it's mostly gas and things of that nature. So I talk about this because you have to appreciate the awesomeness of how the cosmos, how our universe came to be, right? We are a part of the stars, the dust, the everything that was out in the universe. That became right. Our life, right? We are connected to that. We are not distant from that. Just because we're on planet Earth and we look up into the night sky and we see all these billions of lights in the sky, all these stars and whatnot, it doesn't mean because there's that physical distance that we're not connected. We are made up of all of the elements outside in space in some form or fashion, right?
Yes, we are. Yes,
even when you take it to a larger, let's go beyond our specific solar system and how that came to be. Look at how the universe, all these galaxies came into being. If you look at the scientific realm, they talk about the Big Bang. Something just boom, and then all this particles came out, this gas and all these things, and it created all these wonderful things that we see. If you guys ever want to see space, you know, look up, you can Google images of different constellations, the Pleiades star system, all the different, Virgo and what is it, all the astrology constellations that are out there. Just billions upon billions of stuff that we can't even get to, that we theorize about mostly because we can't physically get there. You know, something, you had this big bang of all this stuff that went out there. You had these molecular clouds, and then stars came to form, and then planets and things of that nature. And life came about. You know, in order for us to be here, even specifically on Earth, you had to have all of these events to take place in order for human beings to come into existence. And for me, that just fills me with a sense of awe. It's like, wow. Yeah. And I'm not saying that it was all done just specifically for us, but you have to appreciate the fact of the amount of energy and time, billions of years, the planet, our own planet developed. Not to mention, I don't even know how old I think the universe is, the Big Bang, they were theorizing 13 billion years ago. All of these things came into play. And then here we are in this present day. We are connected to the universe. We are connected to the cosmos. There's no doubt about that. So that's why I went through all of this to explain, you know, well, how did the sun come about and how did our solar system come about? Because I need you to understand or just get into the mindset of we are, it's not just here, we are on our planets in our own little world and what have you, but we are part of a greater creation. Then that creation came from the goddess, right? A lot of the ancient people, they understood some of this, much of it. There, you know, a lot of wonderful ancient religions and things of that nature that they had an understanding of this knowledge. This was before Western influences of telescopes and things of that nature. You know, Nakeem, you've heard of the Dogon tribe in West Africa, right? And I think that's kind of like the Mali, in the area of Mali. They said the Dogon people, now this was before technology of being able to see stars and planets outside of, or you know, was it outside of Earth. They knew that Saturn had rings. How did they know
and see,
that?
They didn't need a telescope, Shakti. They were in tune.
There you go.
See, in tune to this planet in ways that we can't even fathom.
That's right.
They were in tune to the planet to know, like you said, they knew that Saturn had rings. They knew that we weren't the only planet either. Early hieroglyphics denote the concept of a system and planets beyond the one we're present on. Tahuti, the greatest
That's right.
mind. Tahuti talks about that. Most people call him Toth or Toth, T-H-O-T-H. That's not his name. His name is Tahuti. But anyway, Tahuti with the great knowledge. He was one of the first writers to speak
That's
about
right.
that solar system. And then, of course, we know it's on the walls in Egypt, the hieroglyphics. They knew. They knew.
That's right.
They knew. They knew. And they knew innately. Why?
That's
because,
right.
for instance, my son, I only have one child, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's he's from me. He is of Naki and Mark, his parents, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
anything he does, I can almost predict his movements. Why? Because he is of me. He's my seed. So that simply means that I can almost tell you what he's going to do, what he's going to wear to a job interview, what he's going to say in response to this, his corny sense of humor. I can tell you when he's serious. I can tell you when he's sad. Why? Because he's
right.
of me. So that simply means that because they were so connected to the thing that they were of.
That's right.
To
That's
the
right.
energy that they were of, they didn't have to have mechanics and technology, even though they had such a advanced technology, is blowing what we think we're doing now out of the water. So well, that's
right.
another topic too. But they did have technology. It just wasn't what we have now. But what
exactly.
was even more concise for them was their telepathy and their connection
right.
to the spirit and energy world. So that's
let me
that's
let,
the,
let Let
Go
me
ahead,
take
Shakti.
This to another. No. I was going to say, let me take. This is something that popped into my mind. If you've ever studied some of the ancient astrology systems, Vedic astrology, you know they talk about the planets. They include the moon
uh-huh.
as a right. They include the moon as a planet as well, and that's fine. So they talk about the sun, the moon, Jupiter, and Mercury, and Venus, and blah blah blah. Did you notice that they never talk about Pluto? Pluto does not come into the scene. Now, here's the funny thing. I thought, oh, well, you know, when I was just learning about these different systems and, oh, well, maybe they were just ignorant and they didn't know that Pluto was there. They couldn't see it or whatever, right? That's what my Western mind was thinking. It was just until recently I found out, and I think you guys, some of you, if you know about, if you, you know, watch NASA or whatnot, Pluto is no longer a planet. Did you know that? They have downgraded Pluto. Pluto is not considered a planet. It is considered
That's
something
right.
else. Right. And
well,
so
man
we
got
talk
involved
about,
in that. Mm-hmm.
And it was the ancient people who knew about that. They knew that Pluto was not a planet. They never included it in their system. Now, Western astrology, I think, did. But Vedic astrology from India, they never included Pluto because Pluto is not a planet. And we just now found out. NASA has just now said it's been, what, within the past couple of years or so, it's been downgraded from a planet to some other. I can't remember what they said it was.
Well, that's just like the whole zodiac sign changing, Shakti. Now there's supposed to be 13 zodiac signs as opposed to 12. I mean, man is, again, these are all attempts to figure out God or to figure out the all,
right.
that cosmic energy. You can't, it's beyond us. Now, we can tap into it, but to say that we have encompassed it all, wrong.
No. Uh-uh. No. Well, Western, see, I believe, I'll be honest with you, I believe in a combination of both, of Western, of what some of the scientific studies that we've done in the West, because it can give, like, some of the precise information. But then I also believe in ancient knowledge as well. And I believe that ancient knowledge, see, one of the, this was a really good book. I recommend it to people if you're into Sanskrit mantras. Please read this book. It's called Healing Mantras, and it's by Thomas Ashley Farrand. He was an American
yes.
Vedic priest. And one of the wonderful things that he wrote about in his book is that, see, the ancient yogis and sages and whatnot had a lot of this divine information about the cosmos, how the universe came to be, understanding of, you know, human nature and all these issues and problems and solutions to these problems, right? They had this knowledge through their meditations, through being connected to the universe, through being connected even to the elements on our planet. And one of the things about it is that rather than tell people, okay, planet Earth is it existed because of the sun, and this is how the sun developed. The sun developed was ABC3. You know, if you try to remember all that, people are not going to remember that. That's like trying to list a multiple principles of life. Folks don't remember that. But what they do remember are stories. If I told you that the way that the southern Indian, the Shaivites, the people who believe that, you know, Shiva is a supreme being, the way that creation happened is that Shiva appeared as this huge pillar of light and fire, and then all of a sudden, boom, creation comes. Then you're gonna remember that. And these are stories that are passed down throughout the generations. People may not know or understand these were a lot of these were descriptions of astrological events or astronomical events or how the universe got started or things of that nature. But the stories do continue down. And those people who do know, usually like a small percentage, they understand, okay, this is what the people were talking about. This is the science. The science is in the mythology. You know, I always believe that the science has been in the mythology.
Absolutely. Well, yeah. There was no separation of church and state until they separated church and state, meaning
right.
religion, culture, that was all, it was a way of life as opposed to something you did on Sundays or Saturdays or once a week or whatever, you know. It was a daily thing. They were connected to the earth and everything that they did. They didn't kill an animal unless they gave thanks for the animal first. Then they gave
right.
some back to the land. I mean, everything was done with respect to this planet. Human beings messed up because we think somehow we're superior. We're superior to the ant. We're superior to the ant because we talk. The ant probably talks to the other ants. We just can't hear them talk, right?
That's
if
right.
you really just want to talk, they communicate. I'm sure they do. I don't know how, but they do. So we that's the issue. And I think that this topic really brings this home because it mm-hmm. further reminds us we are all neighbors. Man,
that's right.
Water, fire, earth, air, animal, monkey, insect, dog. Mm-hmm. We are all neighbors.
That's
okay.
right. And we're all made of, and that's why people say, in the spiritual communities, that there are people who say, you know, there isn't a heaven in a sense of a place you go to. Like, you know, if you go up above the clouds, you'll see angels and whatnot. That's actually not true. I've been up in the clouds on the plains, and I haven't seen any angels up there yet. But it's really a state of being, right? All of these forces that are out there are also within us. And if you look at even from the scientific view, we are all made up of all of the elements that are out in space. We're not disconnected. The physical understanding of, you know, I'm here and something is way out there beyond, you know, I'd have to get a special suit and a spaceship to get out there. That has nothing to do with your connection. You're already connected to these, I would say, divine beings that are out in space, even to the divine beings, the planets. Many systems believe that the planets are divine beings. Ancient Egypt was like that. They had, I was reading their, Rosemary Clark wrote a book, Sacred Something. She has these two volumes of books. And one of them talks about all of the deities that were assigned to various constellations in the sky. And there were a lot of them. I think they call them deacons or something like that, D-E-C-A-N-S. And all of these are divine beings. All of these are things within us. If you get attracted to a constellation, there's a reason for that. There's a connection, an interconnection that you have, and it's something that you should definitely explore, I would say.
And, you know, we have hosts that do Akashic Record readings, and I know in some modalities of Akashic Record readings, you can actually mm-hmm. find your star of origin. So I've always wanted to know what star. I think I might be Sirian, but I don't know. Who knows?
You might be what?
Sirian, from the star Sirian.
You know, it's interesting because this is funny. I'm glad you said that because I believe that as well. I know I have a connection to the dog star. Sirius is the Greek name. Septet is the ancient Egyptian name. I also have had the Palladian star system. I don't know what it is, but I'm very attracted to the Palladian star system. Like, I really believe that myself or some part of me is from there. And I love, and Sirius to me is the origin of life. And maybe that's because I, you know, been influenced by ancient Egyptian. I love the ancient Egyptians. We'll talk about that. We'll have a show about that one day. But ancient Egypt and all of the cosmology there is just, you know, hugely fascinating because not only did they have a spiritual, cultural, religious kind of connection, but they also had a very scientific one. They had a spiritual science. And that's what I'm really drawn to that. But the Palladian star system for me is my draw. I don't know why. You know, there's something about it. I don't know if it's just the beauty of the stars, but I've been trying to look at different mythologies from Native American, for example, like they call them the Seven Sisters. And ancient Egypt, I think it's called the Seven Hathors, or, you know, Hathors in the Greek, but which is Hetheru.
Hetheru.
I'm looking at different systems to try to figure out what is that connection. There's something that, in the Palladian star system, I read, you know, the Mamiwata people who are from the spiritual group from West Africa, and it's West African voodoo. We talked about voodoo on this show before, 10,000-year-old religion, right? And it's indigenous to West Africa for the most part. I remember something reading that the Palladian star system is connected to West African voodoo and to that particular cultural group, Bodun. It fascinates me. And I'm like, I don't know why. I just know that there's a connection. I can't figure it out. And I continue to, you know, try to seek. So let's go ahead and start talking about some of these cosmic goddesses, Naki. Because there are a lot. I mean, if you look at some of the star constellations, even if you go to ancient Greek, look at ancient Greek mythology, there are a lot of stars and constellations that are associated with goddesses as well as some of the gods as well. What I'd like to go to, since we were talking about West Africa just a moment ago, if you've ever heard of the Dahomey kingdom, Dahomey, Dahomey, this was
Dahomey.
An African, they pronounce it differently. So Dahomey, I don't know it. I was looking at Wikipedia.
I think both are right.
Dahomey.
I've heard it both ways. Yes.
So it was a kingdom that existed in West Africa. So we're talking about between Nigeria, Togo, Benin and Togo, Burkina Faso area. And it was, it went from like, it existed from about maybe the 1600s to 1900s, right? That would be during this time of the Atlantic slave trade. So they're very well known, almost like the last kingdom of West Africa. I'm not saying it is the last kingdom, but, you know, it's kind of seen that way. From, I would say, an African-American perspective. So in this particular mythology, there is a goddess, a creator goddess called Mawu, or Mahu is another alternative name for her. In some of the myths, she is Mawu and Lisa, a twin sister slash wife of the male god Lisa. I think it's Lisa is the name of how it's pronounced. Lisa, I think it's pronounced Lisa. Sometimes it's Mawu Lisa as an androgynous spirit. But anyway, Mawu is, you know, beloved of the Ewe people, EWE, and the Fon people in the present day Republic of Benin. It's formerly called the Abomey or Dahomey region. Benin is in West Africa, as we said before. It's between Togo to its west and Nigeria to its east and south and Burkina Faso and Niger. So riding on an elephant's back, pregnant with all of life, Mawu brings bounty, fertility, creativity, and the cool, cleansing energy of the moon. She's also associated with the moon, sun and moon. Her beautiful planet Earth is held up by this great serpent called Aida Wedo. Mawu is the daughter of the supreme goddess Nana Buluku, who created the world. And Mawu is she who gives birth to all forms and who created humanity. So there are a couple of interesting stories that I'd like to share with you about Mawu. And one is how humanity became arrogant. You know, this is really an interesting thing because I find in a lot of different systems, there's this human beings becoming arrogant issue and really angering the goddess or the gods, right? So anyway, in this story, humanity becomes ignorant. So annoyed with her, or arrogant rather, I'm sorry, annoyed with her earthly creation, Mawu retreats to her home in the sky. Things didn't go well on Earth after her departure, so Mawu sent her son, or, you know, consort, Liza, to teach useful arts to humanity and also instructed him to watch the people each day to ensure obedience to her rules. So Liza is associated with the sun, and in this particular story, Mawu is the moon. And in some places, they're all, like I said, they're a husband and wife or some kind of an androgynous being. So basically, she sent them to, you know, I'm done with these folks. I gave birth to them, and, you know, they're not acting right, but I need you to go down there and help them out. So that's one story. Another story is kind of interesting, and it's where Mawu is creating Earth, creating the Earth and creating life all on Earth. And she sees that, she becomes concerned that, you know, earth and whatnot is too heavy, and so she asked the primeval serpent, Aida Wedo, to hold the earth up, to get beneath the earth and thrust it up into the sky. And she also, at the time, she created a being called Monkey, right? We all know what a monkey is. And she asked Monkey to help her, you know, make other animals out of clay. Well, Monkey kind of took this to an extreme. He became real arrogant, like, I'm this and that. I know I could do this and that. He kind of created all this chaos on Earth, and then some of the one other god had to come in and be like, okay, we gotta, you know, we need to really teach human beings, you know, who to worship and you know where the power really comes from. But Monkey was like, yeah, that's right. You know, I'm a creator. He gets so arrogant that he even goes up to Mawu and says, I'm gonna show you what I can do. And so he goes up there, tries to create something, and it just falls apart, you know. It's really bad. So it didn't turn out. And then Mawu, in her response to him, where he failed miserably to create, Mawu, she made him a bowl of porridge with the seed of death in it to remind him that only she can give life and she can also take it away. Now, I laugh about that only because I've heard that, you know, in my own family. Like, you know how kids get, when they get bold and arrogant, I can do this and I don't have to listen to you and stuff. Like, I remember my mother told me,
yeah,
you know, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. Now, it's not a threat in a mortal threat. It's just like, understand your place here, kid.
Exactly. I'm the
Stop
mom.
Being
I'm the
arrogant.
All one. We all exist.
That's
one.
Right.
Yeah. The first pause and the last pause.
Now I don't know what Monkey is seen like in the what is it, the Dahomey kingdom at that time. So I don't know the concepts there. But I see Monkey as being that part of the arrogant part of human beings, right? I can do this. I can do that. I've developed iron. I don't need God. I got all my tools and whatever. Forget God. Forget the goddess. I don't need her. I can do this myself. And then she has to remind you, I'm the one who gives life. Remember that. Like Pele coming and cleaning out part of the Hawaii with the volcano, and people were saying, hey, let her clean house. This is her land. You can sell it and pretend to sell it and that this is yours and all this stuff, but she is the real person who owns the land here, you know. So it's understanding that, you know, where is your place? You know, what is your place in the world? Anyway, I love telling that story. Naki, did you want to share with us, you ready to share with us about Sirius, the, was it Black Isis, the Sopdet? Take us to ancient Egypt and understand a little bit about a constellation and the connection with Aset.
Okay. I kind of thought I would be last, but okay.
I can continue on with something else.
I'm fine.
Just mixing it up.
Do it.
Okay, cool. All right.
Well, Black Aset or Sedpet or Sopdet is the I don't know what to say counterpart, but she's the polar opposite maybe or polarity of Aset.
Okay.
The cosmic Aset was identified by the ancient Egyptians as the star Sirius, the brilliant herald of the new year when it rose over the eastern horizon with the sun to mark the annual flooding of the Nile. So here we see that the presence of this particular constellation told the people of Kemet, or ancient Egypt, I want to use their real names. If you tell me your name is Paul, I don't want to call you John, because John makes me happy. I'm going to call you Paul.
Go ahead, girl.
Okay. So, ancient Kemet. So every year when it rose over the eastern horizon with the sun to mark, that just let them know that the Nile was going to flood, and that meant long life, fertility, you know, the plants and things would grow, crops, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, now we get into who was Black Aset. The principle of creation is embodied in her, okay?
Right.
But Aset contains all polarities within herself, like the double star Sirius. She is both male and female, passive and dynamic, and she's the point from where the creative principle comes. She is the source. Aset is likened to Shakti, or pure cosmic energy, which is the essence of life itself, not just the temporary animation of our bodies, but the life energy that existed before birth and that exists after death. So without this aspect of Aset, without the power to conceive and transmute, there can be nothing. So that's something to think about.
Yeah.
She was the personification of the great feminine, creative power, which conceived and brought forth every living creature, everything from the gods in heaven to the man on earth to the incense on the ground. What she brought forth, she protected and cared for and fed and nourished, and she employed her life in using her power graciously and successfully, not only in creating new beings, but in restoring those that were dead. So you see this full circle. So you see birth. So before birth, then birth, then then death, then the transmutation of death into new life again. So it's the cosmic circle, if you will, the continuation of it all. And here's the next sentence. Aset expresses the full range of existence, from her enchanting stellar beauty to her embodiment on earth. She was all of it. She was all of it. Black Aset contains all of the mysteries of life, the mysteries of life and death, the mystery of the cosmos with its far-flung constellations, and the central sun which vivifies our solar system. At the source of all being, each and every principle may be found in her. Aset is like the blackness of primordial Kemet, the hidden womb of human creation. We talked about this before, the darkness in the womb. For 9 months, we swim in dark water, almost likened to the abyss,
right?
Okay. This cosmic energy is embodied in Aset and is represented by the snake, the fire serpent, interestingly, an endlessly spiraling energy that links Aset directly through her mother, Nut, who sometimes bears the head of the serpent, to the other eight primordials. So the story goes as thus. When Nut became pregnant, the sun was angry at her and said her children could not be born on any day of the year. So Tehuti, always Aset's loyal ally, devised a little game to play with Ra, the sun god, somebody knows who Ra is, and won 5 days in the calendar year so that the children of Nut could be born. It is said that Aset was born on the fourth day, or the lucky day, and it was a beautiful festival of heaven and earth. Okay, so Aset was born in the form, this form of Aset was born in the form of a very, very dark-skinned, Kemetic child. Nut exclaimed, "As behold, I have become thy mother." And this was the origin of her name, Ast, A-S-T, or Aset.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The 5 days that Tahuti won were known as epigomenial days.
Yeah.
Epigomenial. Now, I'm not sure what that means, but we can look it up if you want to know. Epigomenial days, and I do. And were an intrinsic part of the Kemetic calendar. So I'm going to look up. Do you know what that word, Shakti? Do you know what that word means? Epigomenial.
It's kind of like this, these extra days of the year, because the calendar system was a bit different. You know, we are on the Gregorian system. And I'm looking it up right now because I remember I used to know what the meaning of it. It says
five
intercalated days of the calendar of the Egyptians. So in other words, really the Egyptians had a 360-year day. And I mean, sorry, 360 days in a year. And then the five were kind of like these, I would say, extra days. These were considered to be holy days. Usually I think it was in the summertime. And maybe even like the July or August of our time. And it was a time where, five of the main gods and goddesses were created. And that would be Osiris, Isis, I'm sorry, let me say the names. Oh, Lord, please forgive me. What is Osiris?
Asar.
Aset, Nebhet, was a Nephthys, I think it is her sister, Set. Was also born. Mm-hmm. And maybe, what is his name? Oh, Lord, please help me. The eagle-headed one.
Tahuti.
No, not Tahuti. He came before them. It's not Tahuti. It's not, it starts with an Heru. That's what it is. There are two different Herus. There's Heru that was born of Aset and Asar, which is Isis and Osiris. And there's the Heru the Elder, I think. Anyway, they're different mythologies and stuff like that. I'm sorry, I've gotten all into this. You know, people just know that we can go deep, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
We go real deep with that. But basically, it is these certain five days in the Egyptian solar calendar. And that has to do with the special time where these five gods and goddesses were born. That's basically what it is. Yeah. So,
gotcha.
And since you were talking about Nut, I was trying to figure out, well, how do we end the show? This girl, you got into some deep stuff. I just have to say, I was like, wow, we could do a whole other hour, but we're not going to do that to you guys. One of the things I wanted to talk about is Nut and how Nut represents the night sky. Most often she was identified as the nighttime sky, but also she just became a sky goddess. And as Naki was pointing out in the story about how, what was it? Basically, Ra, who was the father, the sun god, was upset with Nut and her husband, Geb, you know, getting it on. He didn't want the two of them to be together. So he wanted them to be separate. And then also demanded that any children that were born of their, you know, the two of them getting together would not be born on any day of the year. That's where Jehuti came in. Jehuti and Khonsu. Khonsu is the god of the moon. Jehuti is the god of the scribes and knowledge. And he was a Khonsu. The moon was really into gambling. So Jehuti got him into a game, right? And basically what he did in this kind of game of chance is that he won. Jehuti won 5 days of the year in order to help Nut give birth to the gods, the Epigomenal days.
That's what I just
said. That's what I'm saying. So Nut is also she's a sky goddess. She's a nighttime goddess. She's often depicted as with a nude body, you know, overarching the earth, you know, and usually you see stars and what within her body. So she's also a very important cosmic goddess. who gave birth to the gods who basically took care of us. We'll put it that way. You know, helped us to learn about how to live and what our connection is to the universe, and also to help deal with our other issues, you know, more human issues and things of that nature. So, wow. Well, you know, we can really take this on in so many different ways.
I keep bringing up
all the information I have. Right. Oh, I'm sorry.
No.
Go ahead and finish.
No, Shakti, because I want to give you time to get to some other goddesses. I got more notes.
There's so many other goddesses, and I'm going to, because when you're talking about the universe and the cosmos, I mean, it's just infinite, right? So I'll add in something, there is a goddess I was going to talk about called Astraea, who comes from ancient
mm-hmm.
Greek. Astraea means star mating or starry night. She was the daughter of Astraeus, that has an S at the end, and Eos. She was a virgin goddess of innocence and purity, and is always associated with the goddess of justice, which is Dike, or Dicky is another word they pronounce her name. But she is not the goddess of justice, but she's often associated. And one of the interesting things about her is that, she lived on Earth in the golden age when all lived in peace and all together. In peace together. And what's interesting about that in terms of the golden age, this is a period of time where human beings and immortals or human beings and God were one. You know, everybody lived in harmony. But as humankind grew more and more violent, and you also have the invention of the, what is it, when the discovery of iron in the Iron Age. Iron is good for a lot of things, you know, cooking and, you know, cutting through stuff if you, you know, need to create ground in order to grow things. But also it's been used in a very violent way, you know, swords and knives and things of that nature, guns and what have you. And human beings became violent, you know, using this metal as violence. And when the gods saw this, they abandoned the world or retreated to heaven. Now, it doesn't mean that they abandoned it, meaning that, you know, you guys are on your own. We're not involved in your lives. But there's a sense of, because we see this in India and in some of their concepts of what age we're in. Age where we're the furthest from God. Right now, we're kind of the furthest from any sense of the goddess or anything like that. We're not hooked in as a mass into our divine nature, into divinity at all. And that's why we're in a very tumultuous time where we're fighting people. This is mine. This is yours. Your people over there. We don't want you here. You know, all this kind of egocentric type of things. So different ancient cultures talked about how there was a time where we were all one and we were all peaceful. And then, you know, things just got, as time went on and as we developed as human beings, we got separated from that. So I find that interesting about, you know, there was a golden age in ancient Greek as well. So anyway, so she retreated as well to the heavens. She was the last, Astraea was the last of the immortals to retreat. And they did say that at some point she will return, but she was forced to abandon the earth because of all the violence and whatnot. Remember, she's the virgin. She represents innocence and things of that nature. But you know, we could go on forever. And as you said, Naki, we could just, this is a topic that, oh my goodness. I mean, I can't tell you how many goddesses of the cosmos and creation that we could go over here. And the whole purpose for us doing this is to introduce you to different goddesses, but also to talk about how we're connected. We are not separated from any of this. We just think we are. That's a big difference.
Exactly.
And what we want, we bring these topics to you because we want you to feel connected. There are many of us, many goddesses and gods, who feel very isolated and alone. Maybe because you have a different way of thinking. You're more spiritual than religious. Maybe because you feel lost and that there's no guidance and the people around you are not the people to help you get out of the situation you're in. There's a lot of darkness that's out there. And it's not to scare people, but you know, there is. You know, I go through my periods of time where I just feel very separated, alone or whatnot. I feel less of that now as I started my spiritual journey. But we invite the goddess to you. The goddess is the great mother. However you see her, whatever role or whatever specialization she has, the goddess is a mother. And goddesses to me are like universes upon universes upon galaxies upon universes. I mean, there's so many areas that they can help us with, even though some generally speaking will say, oh, okay, well, this goddess, she specializes in this. And it's true. But also, they are the great mother. They are part of the great divine. If you want to connect yourself with a cosmic goddess, you know, take all of the elements that we've spoken about here. You can take a goddess of fire and connect with her. You could take the goddess of earth, a goddess of air, wind, the goddess of water. You can connect with either one of those, or you can put it all together, because all of those are the elements that make up of who we are. All of those, fire, water, air, and earth, all of that is a part of ourselves. For those of you who want to take it a little bit further, you can take a candle, light a candle, representation of fire. You can have earth in the form of, it could be flowers, it could be actual dirt. Some people do use that, or a plant.
A crystal.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm.
You can have incense. Do a sweet-smelling incense, right? That reflects
air.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then you can have a glass or a cup of water, and that represents water. And you take those elements and you set them before you. Some people have certain designs that they put them in, and I wouldn't say if you're not familiar with that, don't worry about that. But set that maybe on like a TV tray table or something, or a desk in front of you. You know, light your candle. And call out to the goddess. Now, I always believe that the most powerful way to connect with a goddess is your most heartful prayer. Your most sincerest prayer to the goddess will make that connection. And not only that, don't just do it once, but do it several times. And then what I mean is, like, do it every day. If you need Australia to come and you are in her need, you want to connect more with the cosmos, call on Australia. If you are wanting to call on Mawu, call on Mawu, you know. If you want to call on any of the goddesses that we've spoken of, to Pele, you need some more power or energy in your life, or you need some justice. There's so many goddesses out there that you can connect with. But anyway, the most heartfelt prayer is the one that I believe is the one that will draw the goddess to you. Even chanting her name, because the name over... These are goddesses of ancient civilizations that have survived to this day, and the name itself has power. So chant the name Australia, chant the name Mawu, chant the name Newt, or was it Septet or Aset, and those goddesses will come to you and they will help you. Let them know the difficulties that you're dealing with. Let her know the problems or the challenges or the obstacles that you're facing in life. Or if it's not even about challenges, you just want to connect, ask to connect, you know. And do that often. Do it every day. Do it as often as you can. And the goddess will appear in your life. You can even ask her to show a sign of faith. We call it a sign of faith. Maybe she makes the candlelight dance, right? Or maybe, just some good news, something you've been waiting for happens. Just ask for a sign of faith. Ask for her, like, I really want to feel your presence. I really want to hear your voice. I really want to know that you are there. Help me to have that experience. And just be open, you know. That's my advice for connecting to the cosmos. Do you have any advice or any additional advice, Meki, that you can provide
good
for
advice.
Our folks? Yeah.
I mean, that's very good advice. Another thing would be being outside is a really good way to
Absolutely.
Connect, because you're out in nature. You're there with the cosmos, with the energy,
mm-hmm.
with the elements, with our neighbors, our animal neighbors, right? Our insect
mm-hmm.
neighbors. So that connection, I know I've had an opportunity to meditate by water. I've had an opportunity to meditate by a tree. And listen, there's nothing like it. It is something so magical about sitting
yes.
by an old tree. And just even if you don't want to close your eyes, you might, you know, not maybe the park is crowded, you don't want to close your eyes. But even in just quiet meditation and awe, you know,
mm-hmm.
just sit there and listen and feel the energy that is representative in that tree. And I just encourage everybody to
get outside more, present company included, myself included. But it's a wonderful way also to connect. We are so grateful that you tuned in. We hope you learned something. Shakti, that was awesome. Thank you so much for that lesson. I learned.
Oh, you're welcome.
I enjoyed learning about the earth before the earth, or the cosmos before what we think we know came to be. So it's ever unfolding. It's never ending. You can never get it wrong, and you can never get it finished. So know that, stay on this path of learning and evolving and growing and ever coming into the knowledge that you are God. You are Goddess. And with that, we bid you a wonderful, wonderful week, a wonderful weekend. To our friends in the UK, enjoy. To our friends wherever you are, thank you so much for being with us. Share this. Tell us. We're still waiting for you to make connection with us. Those of you who are speaking to us on our Facebook Goddess Guidance page, we are so grateful for your participation. If you want to reach out to Shakti or myself, Shakti is Shakti Devi. I am Naki, Naki Alayo, Alayo. And you can find all of that on psychictalk.net. You can just look us up, and you can also find archived shows of the Goddess radio show. So with that being said, we'll see you next week, same time, same channel. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
God bless you guys. Bye-bye.
God is blessings.